We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's Big Blue Banter, the answer to all your Giants matters, from run game to coaching to Bob Shepard's timbre. Hosted by Dan Schneier, analysis on fire, a Giants fan since day one, now preaching to the choir. Joined by Nick Filato, breakdowns with bravado, passing you the facts like he passes on gelato. From just outside New York, a couple football dorks, a killer podcast when Dan says receiver corpse. They do the play-by-play, dropping almost every day. These experts know the X and O's just like Danny O'Shea. They do the review of the All-22, dissecting every throw. OCU Mignora lit up Dan's menorah when he was a guest on the show. So there you have it, a podcast for Giants fans who are rabid, who can't wait for Sundays, the NFC East, the Fantasy League standings. We'll see you back here. It's Big Blue Banter.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Big Blue Banter podcast. I am Nicholas Filato, and unfortunately, Dan cannot join me on today's interview with Joe Rolls of the Mile High Report, also the host of the Cover 2 podcast. He covers the Denver Broncos, and we bounce a bunch of things off of each other about the upcoming matchup between the Broncos at MetLife Stadium against the New York Giants. I hope you guys enjoy this interview about scheme, personnel, advantages, and disadvantages between the two teams that will be in this matchup. So let's go Giants, and here is Mr. Joe Rolls.
Welcome back to another episode of Cover 2 Broncos. I am Joe Rolls, and today I had the pleasure to get to talk to Nick Filato. If you guys do not follow Nick on Twitter, you need to. He is at Nick Filato, and it is F-A-L-A-T-O on Twitter. He writes and talks for Big Blue View and Big Blue Banter. And he's a film guy that I have kept up with for years now. So I am glad that I had the excuse to actually finally pick your brain on Cover 2 Broncos. So thank you for joining me.
Joe, thank you so much for having me. I got to say, man, you don't sound like Will Arnett because you're BoJack Horseman on Twitter, but your voice doesn't translate.
It's true. The first time I actually made Cover 2 Broncos, the episode, I had like 3 DMs from people that are like, wait, I did not think you sounded like that. I was like, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not actually a horse either.
You see, I was going to ask you, are you a horse or not? But I would imagine, you know, you do cover the Broncos.
That's true. It's kind of like on the inside, on the, you know, I internalize that. But yeah, so I don't even really kind of, so both these teams kind of enter this weekend. Like, this is a big game, like, for both teams. And I think, like, I've talked to you about this already, but, like, in a lot of ways, before the quarterback competition in Denver, I kind of saw this team, the Giants, as kind of like a mirror image in a way of the Broncos, in the fact that young quarterback embattled, kind of having to prove himself. The team has spent a lot to surround him with talent, and it's kind of like put up or shut up time. And then the Broncos benched Drew Lock. So, like, they have decided that he was not up to the task, at least so far. They decided that Teddy Bridgewater is a better option. But that's kind of what it looks like from afar for the Giants. Like, they're kind of in that mode. Like, Daniel Jones, this is his chance to prove that he is the guy this year.
Yeah, Joe, that's been the big talking point, I would say, throughout the offseason, is Daniel Jones is entering a make it or break it type of season, because Dave Gettleman and this front office made a really, really concerted effort to add skilled explosive playmakers. You bring in Kenny Golladay to be the prototypical X type of receiver for Jason Garrett's offense, something Garrett has had basically his entire coaching career. He's had a Dez Bryant, he's had a Terrell Owens, he's had a Miles Austin. So Kenny Golladay can fill that role on the backside of 3-by-1 sets to possibly create matchups if they get a free access. You know, Jason Garrett loves to run those quick curls that he ran quite often last year. Maybe some of it was because of necessity, because Daniel Jones was your quarterback first year in that offense, second year young quarterback who was turnover prone the year before. Jason Garrett has come out and said he wanted to mitigate those turnovers, and he did, but at the expense of some explosive plays. But there's a lot kind of going on there, a lot to look into. The offensive line definitely didn't help out the scenario. But to circle back to your original question, yeah, Daniel Jones, I mean, he had to make a decision on his fifth-year option next May. You add Kadarius Toney as well. You get a healthy Saquon Barkley back. He needs to kind of clean up the processing that I feel like he hasn't done an excellent job with quite yet. Sometimes things flash on the screen and he can get rid of the football and he burps the baby a little bit too much and he just doesn't get rid of the ball, doesn't pull the trigger on it. And this is the NFL. If you question yourself for a split second, you're done, especially against a pass rushing duo of Von Miller and Bradley Chubb. So, I mean, I'll be watching that this week, but this something throughout the season I hope to see from Daniel Jones. Because last year we saw some positive strides, I would say. Now, it didn't really translate in the stats whatsoever, but you saw him kind of manipulate safeties and single high looks pretty solidly, especially on those four verts that he had success running in 2019 in Pat Shurmur's scheme and last year in 2020 with Jason Garrett. You saw him look off that safety, come back, get a one-on-one advantageous matchup, even if it was to Golden Tate on a slot fade. He would put a pretty good ball out there. And I would say that he throws a pretty solid deep ball. He doesn't have an elite arm. I don't think he has those elite Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes type of physical capabilities. A lot of people kind of compare him to Josh Allen. Oh, he can make that Josh Allen third year leap. But Joe, honestly, man, like he doesn't have that kind of physical ability that Josh Allen has. I think he can be a good quarterback in this league. Like I'm talking maybe, you know, top 18, something like that, maybe top 15 if everything goes right for him. But he has to put it all together this year. This is the year that it's going to have to happen. And he has a coordinator that didn't necessarily maximize yards after the catch last year for him, and an offensive line that's going to be problematic. So there's some things stacked against him, but it's definitely something that could materialize. And we'll get glimpses of it in week one against your Denver Broncos.
Yeah, I mean, it would be huge for him if he can kind of come out of this game, because I mean, even without – so as we say, you know, as we're chatting, Bradley Chubb looks like he is going to be listed as questionable. He's been a limited participant in practice for 2 weeks now. And based on what Fangio has said over the last couple of days, I don't expect him to play. Or if he does play, I do expect him to be very limited. Fangio today said he is obviously not 100%. And those are the kind of things you kind of like. He's like softballing his way into basically being like, we're going to test him out right for the game. And if he's not looking like he's up to it, they won't play him. But even without, even if Bradley Chubb does not play, this Broncos defense should be pretty good. They should be a pretty good test for Jones. And the way Fangio rotates his safeties, I do expect that to put a lot of stress on Jones having to process pre-snap versus post-snap reads, just because when a safety spins like that, all of a sudden the look is going to be different. And the Broncos use a lot of cover six. They mix in a decent bit of cover three. They do a lot of zone match. So a lot of charting stuff gives them a lot of man coverage, but last year, especially, like, I don't know if they were running that much man compared to like what the analytics say. Whereas, like, I think they were running a lot of zone match. But now that they have Patrick Surtain, now that they've gone out and got Kyle Fuller, Ronald Darby, the secondary is good enough that they could run man, like just straight up man up on the receivers. And the fact that the Giants have they dealt with a lot of injuries. You and I have chatted about this. Kenny Golladay was limited early in camp, hasn't gotten to practice much. I know Tony has been limited for a big chunk. So do you expect them to play?
Yes, I expect both those players to play. I expect Saquon Barkley to play. I would say the one player that I don't expect to play is Evan Ingram. He actually might have already been ruled out right before we started recording this. I don't expect to see him at all. So I think you're going to see a lot of Caden Smith and a lot of Kyle Rudolph, somebody not a lot of people are really talking about because he dealt with the foot surgery through the offseason. The Giants said they were going to sign him. Then they found out he had the foot injury. They honored the contract that they gave him. That's the Giants organization, stand-up, button-up organization. Kyle Rudolph seems like he's going to be healthy. I think he's going to actually be a low-key big part of this offense because we know Jason Garrett loves those 12 and 13 personnel packages. I want to say that he ran 12 personnel like 27% of the time last year, which was one of the top teams. So, I mean, that's a lot of tight ends, and they love stick. They love the stick concept. They love the spacing concept. And honestly, Evan Engram was sort of a square peg in a round hole in that role. I know that rhymed. That's pretty cool. But he was last year because he's not the type of player that you want running 5 yards up the field, breaking back, sinking his hips, breaking back towards a quarterback and having to quickly concentrate on a ball that's already been released from the quarterback's hands. His concentration isn't that great. His catching ability is marginal at best, whereas Kyle Rudolph is one of the best catching tight ends in the National Football League. Has incredibly soft hands. He's a nuanced route runner, but he's just not the athlete that Evan Engram has. And there's something among Giant fans, Joe, that like we always somewhat complain about. It seems like Evan Engram, he was drafted in 2017 first round to be that tight end who can split two high looks, split the seam, and kind of be a thorn in the defensive coordinator's side. And he's never really been utilized to that potential quite yet. And this is the third coaching staff now. You had McAdoo, you had Shermer, who you're well aware of, and now you have Jason Garrett. And last year, that wasn't necessarily his prime utilization. I think the best way you can utilize a healthy Evan Engram is to get him up the seam, get him on drag routes against linebackers or even star type of defenders. He's athletic enough to where he can outrun them, and he'll be a lot bigger than those types of players, but we haven't necessarily seen that materialize. But in terms of Sunday, I think you're still going to see a decent amount of 12 personnel, and they love using Caden Smith as a blocker on their base favorite counter, GH counter type of run, where he kind of just follows the backside guard who kicks out the end man on the line of scrimmage, and he just finds the most dangerous man in the hole, typically the alley defender, and just absolutely annihilates him. Caden Smith has come a long way as a blocker from being like a six-round pick by the 49ers back in 2019. So he's a name to monitor, but behind those two, you're not looking great at the tight end. You're going to have to promote one of these guys who are on the practice squad right now, either the kid from Miami they just picked up or Ryan Izzo, who has a history with Joe Judge. So I guess intrigued to see what exactly happens there.
One thing I'm curious about with that, because if the Giants are going to run a lot of 12, last year the Giants ran quite a bit of gap concepts. More, I want to say it was second in the league when I was looking at Sports Info Solutions charting. The Broncos actually had a lot of problems with it. And by design, I think the Broncos defense kind of concedes a little bit of that because the way that they rely on a safety coming down from the third level to help and run defense, it gives an opportunity for linemen, if they're pulling, to basically get a chance to kind of tee off on a DB. So that is one area where I do think that if the Giants are going to go run heavy, that could be problematic. What do you think?
I think you're going to see a run heavy approach, to be honest. I think it's going to be similar to the two games last season that the Giants played against the Washington football team, which ended up being victories, but it wasn't because the offense was a powerhouse. I think in the second game, the Giants had like 5 turnovers. In the first one, Tay Crowder returned like a 45-yard fumble for a touchdown to squeak out like a 20-19 win. So you're talking about some like questionable offensive outputs right there. But those are the game plans that I expect. I expect an attempt to try and establish the run. I expect a lot of quick game, a lot of slant flat, a lot of spacing concept, a lot of maybe double slants to one side, double curls to the other, like just very, very simplistic concepts that you can try to gauge what the defense is doing pre-snap based off their leverage and then make a decision post-snap, see what you like, and then fire the football, get it out of your hands. I don't think they want to put Andrew Thomas or Matt Parrott / Nate Solder on an island against either of these pass rushers, even if Bradley Chubb is injured. And then you also have Malik Reed, who had a pretty good season last year for you guys as well. So I expect a run-heavy approach, and I expect the Giants, I know their offensive line takes a lot of crap, but I think they could be able to generate some push at the point of attack. They love the power gap, like you said, and like I said before, that counter play is their favorite one. I mean, Wayne Gallman running it last year was solid, but Saquon Barkley running it, you give him a defined hole, you take away the decision-making from Saquon Barkley, and you tell him, follow that blocker. You get him matched up with a safety. If he's 80% of what he was, I mean, he can make that man miss. He can run through. He can do so many different things. And I know that, and I wanted to ask you about this as well. I know you guys are getting Mike Purcell back, who was your guy's nose tackle last year. Do you think, how do you view the overall run defense with him being inserted in it? How do you think that you guys can kind of hold up against the power gap concepts now that you have some more healthy bodies coming back?
I mean, I think getting Mike Purcell back is, I mean, I think the run defense is going to be significantly better than it was last, like over the numbers of last year, just because I've actually dug into this. I've dug into the numbers and I've obviously watched quite a bit of it. But Mike Purcell was playing about 43% of the snaps leading up to his injury because the Broncos lost Jarrell Casey. And then at one point, Shelby Harris and Draymond Jones were both dealing with injuries as well. So Mike Purcell was playing more. And then he got to the Chiefs game and he got hurt. And then basically the bottom fell out of the Broncos run defense because the defensive line hollowed out. He is good at the point of attack. He does a good job withstanding double teams and kind of just neutralizing them. But the thing that really makes him, like, to me, what makes him kind of pop as a nose tackle is he's quicker than he's given credit for. And that shows up mostly against zone. So I don't know how that will actually influence this matchup. But against, like, the Titans run a surprising amount of outside zone. And Purcell is really good at crossing face and then creating problems because he screws up the blocking scheme. I think he might be somebody who basically neutralizes a blocker at the point of attack and allows Josie Jewell or Alexander Johnson to run free. And I do know that he's a more important player than a lot of people give him credit for because the Broncos did what they could to essentially insure themselves against another injury by signing Shamar Stevens. Sorry, that's a tongue twister.
It is.
And Shamar Stevens is, in a lot of ways, he's not quite as stout, I think, at the point of attack as Purcell is. He's a little bit quicker and he's long and he does a good job using that length because the Broncos play a lot of gap and a half with their interior defensive linemen and Purcell's really good at it.
Yeah, and no, we play a lot of gap and a half, two gap type of defense as well. A lot of tight front with the four eye to the strength typically. Three technique is usually Leonard Williams. Four eye last year is Dexter Lawrence. A lot of people think he's just a nose tackle, which is a big misconception with Dexter Lawrence. He can really wreck a lot of game plans. He's a beast, and I'm expecting him to have a really solid season. But Dalvin Tomlinson, the loss of him on the defense, I mean, you're going to have Austin Johnson or Danny Shelton step in to be your nose tackle to kind of eat up those A-gaps if you want to run those similar fronts. I mean, Danny Shelton profiles as an ideal fit for that, but let's see it in action first. But I wanted to ask you, does your defense, I don't want to transition off the offense, I'm sure we'll go back and forth.
Yeah.
But does your defense line up on four eye shades? Are they more eagle front out in the five technique? Or how exactly do you guys line up when you guys are in a three down front?
Oh, man. When we're in a three down front, it's usually a shade with the nose, basically like a one, like slightly off. And then I would say a four eye, mostly. And that does a better job of using Draymond Jones than like asking him to play as an actual five, because Draymond Jones is a little bit short for like, that was like the concern when they first drafted him just because, and again, like they drafted Draymond Jones when Vic Fangio was first hired. So like there was some question as to like how he would fit. But up until that point, the Broncos had Adam Gotsis and Derek Wolfe who were like prototypical fives, in that they were like 6'5", 300 pounds. Whereas Draymond's like 6'3", 280, and he doesn't have the length that they do. And again, like the Broncos, I would say, if you guys go a lot of 12, I would say that the Broncos will match that with base. But the Broncos ran nickel, I want to say 75% of the time, nickel or dime. And throughout camp, the buzz out of camp, and again, I wasn't there, so I didn't see it. But the buzz out of camp is the Broncos are looking to run more dime than they were previously.
Would the linebacker be Johnson or Jewell there?
That's what I was wondering, because based on everything I've watched, Alexander Johnson was the better player last year, but the reports out of camp was Josie Jewell actually was mainly the guy. And when I spoke with the Gazette's George Stoya, one of the things he brought up, and Ryan O'Halloran from the Denver Post actually said this as well, the thing with Josie Jewell is he's the guy that usually was making the calls in the middle. So I think the coaching staff trusts him to be assignment sound more than Alexander Johnson. Because at one point when Jewell was hurt, they actually had Sternad there, and that's the Broncos' third linebacker.
And, wait for it, yeah.
Yep, but they had Sternad there over Alexander Johnson. So that, to me, is a sign that it'll probably be Jewell.
Okay, yeah, I'm wondering. I mean, I know a lot of people who pay attention to college football will flash back to the Iowa-Penn State game from 2017 with Saquon Barkley against Josie Jewell. Jewell didn't do terrible in that game, but there was the one highlight where Barkley got to the edge, and it just – I mean, Barkley's just a different athlete out there. And I mean, Giants fans, we're really, really excited to get Saquon back. And well, I mean, I'm not 100% certain what's going to happen. Actually, it seems like if Dave Gettleman is still in charge, just to deviate a little bit from this game that Saquon Barkley may be resetting the running back market, which is definitely something that myself and my co-host Dan Schneier are not necessarily for. But we'll see, and we'll tackle that when it happens, Joe.
Yeah. Well, and the thing, like, I loved Barkley when he came out. I thought, again, like, this is going, you know, a little bit off the rails. Like, I always have had an issue, and this is honestly similar in a way to the Broncos trading up to get Javonte Williams. I had Javonte Williams as the number one running back in this last draft class, but I always question, like, the process of giving up significant capital to get a running back, which is nothing against the player themselves. It's not, you know, it's not his fault that the way running back works. And part of it for me is just the fact that rushing production is so dependent on the play caller and then the other 10 players and then what the defense does. So it's really hard to reward that kind of investment. That said, like, that's not taking anything away from Barkley. Barkley as a breakaway threat is scary. I went and looked at, I look at a lot of Football Outsiders numbers just because I like the way they adjust for opponent. And I like the fact that they measure efficiency rather than just, you know, the raw totals. And by the efficiency numbers, you guys had the 11th best rushing attack last year without Barkley basically for the entire year. But the two areas where you guys were a little bit behind that was a second level in open field yards, which reflects the running back situation.
Which makes
and Barkley,
sense.
And Barkley will help that a lot, I would think, yeah, if he's healthy.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, it's also something, because a lot of people railed against Jason Garrett last year. And I think Garrett deserves a lot of criticism, but I think sometimes it can become unfair because people are railing against his lack of usage on the running backs out of the backfield. But I'm like, that's not really Wayne Gallman's game. Devonta Freeman was basically gone after like week 5. And then you had Alfred Morris, who actually caught a touchdown pass against the Seattle Seahawks when the Giants went up there and upset them. But those probably weren't your most advantageous ways to move the football, was to utilize those specific people. Because once you get the football in their hands, they're not going, like that stat alludes to, they're not going to make a lot of people miss. Whereas Saquon Barkley, I really hope to see Garrett implement him into the passing attack, whether that be through screens, whether that be through Texas route, which is an angle route. And just get him matched up against the linebacker, get him matched up and make the defense be put into a situation where it's, hey, I got to make this tackle, or this is going to be at least a 15 to 20 yard gain. That's what we're hoping to see, because you're not going to see a lot of 5-step drops in this game. You're going to see Daniel Jones getting rid of the football quickly. It's going to be a lot of quick. And that's honestly what I want to see, because I don't want to see Von Miller teeing up against Nate Solder. I don't want to see Bradley Chubb, if healthy, or Reed going up against Andrew Thomas, who is struggling to just frame his block and stay square. He's just been very, very undisciplined as of right now. And I'm not writing the kid off or anything, but you need to see more from the fourth overall pick from last season. I mean, a lot of people, we might be overreacting a little bit to the preseason game, but I don't necessarily think Andrew Thomas has earned the right for us not to overreact right now because of what we saw last year and what we saw in a little bit in the preseason.
Well, and to your point with Garrett, for all the criticism, like that's what a good coordinator does, is they adjust to the fact that if my tackles are struggling like that, it's on me to call more quick game to try and protect them. And from the Broncos perspective, for those listening, that is one reason why you guys shouldn't like lose your minds if the Broncos do not generate a lot of sacks in this game. Yet, like, and this is a whole, you know, like chicken and the egg argument. I know you understand this, Nick, but like, a lot of fans look at edge rushers and the first thing you see is sacks. And if they don't get sacks, they're doing badly. And that's not true. Like if the Broncos are creating pressure or the Giants have to alter their game plan based on the threat that they present, the Broncos pass rushers are still doing their job if they're creating that pressure anyway. And then it's on everybody else to kind of do their part. So again, guys, if Von Miller does not get three sacks in this game, it's okay. It's basically, I want him to rush Daniel Jones. I want him to, you know, force some mistakes, but I'm not worried about the sack total.
No, and I wouldn't be either if I was a Denver Broncos fan, because Garrett is going, and this is kudos to Jason Garrett, and myself and Dan on the podcast last year gave credit to Garrett after both of those Washington games, which weren't exciting offensive outputs, as we said before, but guess what? They didn't put Daniel Jones in a position to turn the football over. They didn't put their, at that time, rookie tackles with Matt Perrin and Andrew Thomas out on islands against Chase Young and Montez Sweat. Don't let them beat you with their biggest strength. Just try to mitigate them. Run the football. Don't allow them to pin their ears back. Try not to get in a third and long situations where they have the opportunity to pin their ears back, and just get the football out of your hands with quick, easy concepts, slant flat, slant curl. If you want to take a shot, you could run an Ohio concept and try to get hit the number two on the out route, or if it's not there, you can check the football down to a running back. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do to just get the football out of your hands and kind of limit what the effect of Von Miller and Bradley Chubb will have. But then again, if you try to take a shot on first and 10, which Jason Garrett will do once in a while, he does it on first and 10, try to hit a play action shot. If it doesn't work, then you're in second and 10. Then what's going to happen? And if you don't pick up, you know, 4 yards, then you're in third and 10. Or third and 8, if you pick up 2 yards, if you decided to run the football on second and 10, and you could be in a really, really bad spot in those situations. So we're going to hope that the Broncos don't have many of those situations.
It's funny hearing you say that, because that's honestly, if you change Garrett's name to Shermer, that sounds like a lot of the arguments that Broncos fans have made about Shermer is basically like, why isn't he just throwing more? Or why is he calling, you know, how do we end up on second and 10? Well, they're not running enough. And it's like, well, if you run and they stop you, then you're on second and 10. Or if you call a play action shot, it doesn't go anywhere, you have second and long, which, you know, neither here nor there. I have one question for you. I feel like the Broncos defense does have a note on paper, at least they should have the advantage in that matchup. Broncos defense versus the Giants offense.
Yeah.
Broncos offense, I think, like, I am very optimistic about what this offense is going to look like, because I think inserting Teddy Bridgewater is going to open up the offense more than a lot of people expect. Not to say he's a world beater, but just the fact that he's a competent quarterback. He knows the offense. He can audible in and out of stuff. He can, you know, put the ball in the right hands. But the Giants defense is pretty good. And you alluded to this with the defensive line. Even without Tomlinson, I do think the Broncos are going to have a lot of trouble running the ball. So it's going to probably put it in Teddy Bridgewater's hands to have to try and move the ball with a quick game and try and get the ball to Jerry Jeudy, Courtland Sutton. How do you like those matchups with the Broncos receivers versus the cornerbacks of the Giants?
So the Broncos receivers against the cornerbacks of the Giants, with the Dory Jackson healthy now, this is going to allow Patrick Graham, who was a very zone-heavy type of coordinator last year. That was because of the personnel. That was because Isaac Yiadom, who they traded for Josh Jackson to the Green Bay Packers earlier in training camp. That's the reason why they were, I think, in zone a lot. And also, zone coverage is also something that gives you a lot of other advantages. You can play kind of in front of you. You can see the route concepts break down. I think something that James Bradberry may be a little bit better at zone than he is at man, but I also think James Bradberry is arguably a top five corner in this league. I think he's somebody who hasn't really gotten the the love that a lot of the other bigger cornerbacks have received. I think, I mean, I look at it and I have a lot of questions on how Pat Shurmur is going to utilize Jerry Jeudy, because I look at Jerry Jeudy probably as your guy's biggest threat as a wide receiver. James Bradberry is a player who will travel. He's played on the left side. He's played on the right side. In preseason this year, he played a couple snaps in the slot following, I think it was Jacoby Myers. It might have been Nelson Aguilar. It's irrelevant. So if you guys put Jerry Jeudy in the slot, because I believe you used him in the slot about a third of the snaps last year for him, and then you can create a matchup against Darnay Holmes, a second-year player who we like Darnay Holmes, but Darnay Holmes gets very, very grabby, gets a little bit undisciplined in space. He was a boundary corner at UCLA, but he's too small to play that in the NFL, so he gets relegated to the slot. The transition's been adequate, I would say. But if you guys adjust and put Jerry Jeudy against Darnay Holmes, I think you can get a real advantage. But I think the Giants may combat that by moving James Bradberry in the slot. And I think James Bradberry is good enough to lock down a lot of these receivers. I think he would lock down a player like Courtland Sutton, who's maybe not as explosive. Jerry Judy's one that actually does worry me, because Jerry Jeudy's just one of the most incredible route runners in the league. He just got secure the football. He can't drop the football so much like he did last season. And then Adoree Jackson, I think, is somebody who's going to allow Patrick Graham to run man coverage, run a lot more cover one kind of things. I mean, I don't know if they're going to run a lot of cover zero or anything like that. That's not really necessarily their thing. Like I said, we're kind of entering a nebulous area, since the personnel is there to allow Patrick Graham to run more man coverage like he did down when he was the defensive coordinator in Miami. But I think Adoree Jackson could – I think the Giants cornerbacks could have an advantage if Adoree Jackson and James Bradberry get lined up with Courtland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy. But all it takes is one play. Now, you have to also factor in the safeties here, because Patrick Graham loves running trap type of coverages. Logan Ryan is one of the best at baiting the robber position, one of the best with slice coverage, allowing that number two, you know, number two receiver goes inside. Logan Ryan is just waiting for that. He's just going to jump the route. We saw him get an interception in an inverted cover two look against Washington football team to seal that second victory against Alex Smith, where inverted cover two, he stepped down because pre-snap he was the deep middle of the field safety. And then the boundary cornerback and the number two apex defender dropped to the deep halves. That's something that they ran quite a bit down the stretch of the season against younger quarterbacks. I think we would have saw it a lot against Drew Locke. Not certain if we're going to see it against Teddy Bridgewater as much. But I think the Giants secondary is something that if I was a Denver fan, I would be a little hesitant with, because I think they're underrated. Also think Jabril Peppers, you're going to see him coming on the blitz. He's one of the better alley defenders, I would say, in the National Football League. And Julian Love is just a versatile player. Xavier McKinney's definitely somebody you can't overlook. He missed basically his entire rookie season. He came in week 12, played a little bit. But by the end of the year, he's playing 70-plus snaps against the Dallas Cowboys. I really like what Xavier McKinney can probably bring. They are all somewhat interchangeable, I would say, Joe, all of these safeties, but they all also have their role. And I don't want to speak out of both sides of my mouth there, but you can see Jabril Peppers drop deep middle of the field. You'll see Julian Love do that. You'll see Logan Ryan do that. But then you'll also see each of those guys drop down in the box. You'll see each of those guys blitz. And that's what Patrick Graham wants. He wants to keep the offense on their toes, because a lot of those guys can execute a lot of different roles for what he wants to do. And he, I mean, from pre to post snap, he can really confuse quarterbacks. So that's one thing I am looking forward to. But I mean, you guys have some playmakers there too, bro. And KJ Hamler is a player. How are you guys going to implement him?
I mean, I think he's going to be a slot. Like, I think he's going to get designed touches. I think he is going to be mostly as a slot. I know Shurmur likes to run slot fades. He is going to be the vertical threat. And then he's going to use some option stuff. That's what they did in the preseason with him. And having him and Jeudy on the same side, basically it creates conflict, just because you're going to have one of them is able to separate. The other one's just going to run off the top and free him up. Question for you. The edge rush is kind of like, well, there's two parts to this, because you just kind of described exactly what I was wondering about. Based on what I've seen, and again, I have kind of limited access to all 22 right now, but Graham did not send five that often last year. But at the same time, you guys don't necessarily have a premier edge rusher. Although I will say that when I watched Bobby Massey against Lorenzo Carter, Bobby Massey lost enough that I was actually pretty concerned about Bobby Massey coming into camp. So I do think that that could be something that Broncos fans might be sleeping on. But what does Graham do to like really dial up the pass rush?
So you'll see a lot of games up front. You'll see the stunts and the twists, whether it be TE or ET. You'll see Leonard Williams be used in a lot of different manners, in a lot of different ways, I should say. He'll put him on the edge if he really wants to. I don't think that's going to happen as much this season now that the Giants actually have some edge rushers that they don't have to put like Jabal Sheard and David Mayo there. But I think you're going to see a lot of that in their four-man pressure packages. I mean, in their five-man pressure packages, they will bring the, whether it's a 3-by-1 set or a 2-by-2 set, whoever that closest defensive back is to the end man on the line of scrimmage, they'll sell that really, really well and bring him off. They'll drop a safety down into the box, whether it be Logan Ryan or Jabril Peppers, send him. And they like to run some A plug as well. They'll just bring Blake Martinez up the A gap and try to create interior pressure that way. Saw in the preseason them run a twist in the A gap with both linebackers. They sugared the A gap and then they bailed out it prior in a play prior to that. And then in this play, it was a third down and it was Carter Coughlin, who's a former edge rusher. Now they're playing at linebacker along with Devontae Downs, who's no longer on the roster. And they just twisted against the Browns and ended up getting a sack fumble on that play, I believe. So I think those are the ways you're going to see the pressure. I don't expect a lot of blitzing. It's not something they did last season to the Ravens or something like that. But I do believe them to be able to get pressure with who they have. And I also think just bringing Lorenzo Carter up, that's somebody who tore his Achilles in week 5. He's back. He looks good out there. Lorenzo Carter could, and this is his contract year, he could be a big surprise. And I've been on that Lorenzo Carter train since the Giants drafted him in the 3rd round out of Georgia. I really love that pick. Hasn't necessarily come to fruition, but he's somebody that has the athletic capabilities. He has the bend in his lower half. At least we saw that against the Patriots back in 2019. And then you add Azeez Ojulari, another bulldog there. I mean, that's a pretty potent duo, I would say, and especially when you consider Dexter Lawrence, 346 pounds or whatever the heck he is, along with Leonard Williams, who is a 300-pound, 6'5" man with incredibly long arms, shouldn't be able to bend like he does. I'm high on this Giants defense. I just hope they stay healthy. I trust in a lot of people who cover the Giants or around the Giants who follow the Giants. Trust Patrick Graham. He showed a lot last season. He was able to maximize the years for James Bradberry, for Blake Martinez, for Jabril Peppers, for Leonard Williams. They all had career years within this guy's defense. And I think they can build on that and hopefully vault themselves into like a top 5 defense. But that's, you need a lot of offensive help for that to happen. You can't be put into a lot of crappy situations. That still remains a question mark.
Well, and that's one of those things that I think Broncos fans are kind of taking for granted, is how good this defense is and how surprising it could be for the Broncos offense. Because again, Graham is on the short list around the NFL for a lot of head coaching jobs, depending on how this year goes. So for those listening, like that is the matchup that I am most anxious about. Just because the Broncos offense has a lot of questions. Obviously, they were atrocious last year. And again, I don't want to throw all that on Drew Lock, because it wasn't just Drew Lock. The Broncos center, Lloyd Cushenberry, definitely, he started every game. He played every snap. He's the only offensive lineman for the Broncos who did, but he was also probably the worst center in football. And he was so bad that he actually made the guards look worse than they were, because he couldn't hold up in pass pro. He was struggling with... And again, coordinators are good at this. They'll dial up situations that isolate you in one-on-ones, and Cushenberry couldn't hold up to that. His anchor was an issue. In the preseason, it looked improved, but again, improving from the worst center in football doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be good. It means he might be below average. We'll see. The good news is he has help around him with Dalton Reisner and Graham Glasgow, but then Bobby Massey is also a question. I think he's better than what the Broncos had last year on the offensive line, just because after Juwan James opted out, the Broncos' right tackle situation was a tire fire for most of the season. But I think Bobby Massey, and I've said this before, so Broncos fans probably know this, but for such a tall player, he doesn't play tall, like in a good way. He has long arms, but a lot of times people get into his frame, but then because he's so tall, they can get underneath him and control him. So it gives him issues with his anchor. That said, like when he can buckle down, like, yeah, he's got the length to do it, but that is a concern for me against Carter. And definitely, I loved Azeez Ojulari. He was one of my top edge rushers. If the Broncos were going to grab an edge, he was the guy I wanted the Broncos to grab. So I am very eager to see how he looks after pro coaching for the last, you know, how long. Special teams for me, I feel like that's going to be a net loss. I think I've been conditioned by watching Tom McMahon for the last 3 years to just think that they're the shitty teams for the Broncos. Like, they're not actually special. And like, obviously Joe Judge knows what he's doing. So like, that looks like an edge that should go your guys' way.
It would appear that way. And Joe Judge, Thomas McGahee, who's the actual special teams coordinator, and Tom Quinn, who was the special teams coordinator under Tom Coughlin, they're all still on staff here. And those are three really, really brilliant minds. And also they keep roster spots similar to the Patriots, specifically for special teams. Now, every team does that to an extent, but they kept two fullbacks, Elijah Penny and Cullen Gillespie, who are ostensibly on the roster, probably because their input on special teams. They brought back Nate Ebner this week, special teamer. CJ Borg got relegated to the practice squad. I don't know if he'll be one of the guys promoted, but they really put a high focus on special teams. Draft guys like Cam Brown out of Penn State, who is like an insane athlete in terms of just incredibly long arms. I think he has like the 99th percentile in arm length for linebackers. And he runs like a gazelle. So, I mean, he's usually, you can put that guy at gunner as a linebacker. I don't know if they will, but they tried that out in preseason and it didn't look that bad. I would like to imagine that the Giants have the special teams advantage in almost every game they go into. But then again, you look, their mistakes can happen on special teams. All it takes is one breakdown. And
yep.
Cincinnati Bengals, week 12 last year, they had a kick return for a touchdown, and they would have had a second if Cam Brown's long arms didn't bail them out. So, I mean, breakdowns do happen, so there could be vulnerabilities there, but I generally trust the staff in terms of that phase of football. Really, I trust them in defense, too. It's just the offense is the one thing that I'm – and again, it's collective, too. Like I want to be fair. It's not just Jason Garrett. It's the young quarterback. It's the young offensive line. It's Jason Garrett. It's a collective effort. In football, it's really never one person just to assume all the blame. But the offense, I mean, we've been harping on it on the Big Blue Banter podcast, Dan and myself, and it's just it could be problematic this season.
Yeah. I want to ask you this just because you studied Shermer when he was with you guys. The rub in Broncos country is basically influenced by what last year was, and the Broncos had one of the three worst offenses in football last year. And again, I'm not saying it's any one person, but basically Broncos fans are still basically saying the Broncos offense is going to be awful just because Shermer's awful. I've talked to a couple other people based on what I've seen. Again, I have faults with Shermer. So again, I'm not saying he's perfect either, but I don't think he's the worst coordinator in football. Like, am I crazy?
No, I actually think he's an above average coordinator. I didn't like him as a head coach. I'm not a big proponent of somebody, unless you're like Andy Reid, calling the plays as the head coach and who's devoting all of his attention to the offense. I want somebody who's going to allow coordinators to do what coordinators do, and then they focus on the broad macro perspective. And that's not what Pat Shermer was doing with the Giants. However, Pat Shermer was able to unlock Daniel Jones. I mean, 24-12 with that offensive line, 24 touchdowns, 12 interceptions for over 3,000 yards. And you saw some of the plays that Daniel Jones was able to make. I mean, you brought the slot fade. That Shermer likes to run. We saw that in 2019 with Golden Tate, who did really well. I mean, Daniel Jones threw a touchdown pass. I think he was the first quarterback in like week six or seven. I think it was week six to throw a touchdown pass in Foxborough against the Patriots, against that really, really talented 2019 Patriots defense. And Pat Shermer, I feel like as a coordinator, from what I remember, he's somebody who made the offense easier for quarterbacks. A lot of more half-field high-low reads, get the football out of your hand kind of concepts where Daniel Jones is kind of similar to what he did back at Duke when he was in an offense where it was literally, you know, they ran a lot of RPO and stuff like that at Duke as well. But it was an offense that it was, you know, half field, make a read, make a decision, get the football, you know, put a defender in conflict, get the football out of your hands. I think if you talk to a lot of Giants fans, just for perspective, they would take Pat Shermer right now over as an offensive coordinator, not as a head coach, over Jason Garrett in a heartbeat. So, I mean, I didn't watch a lot of Denver's film last year, so I can't really weigh into what he did for you guys. But what's your general gripes? Because I remember some gripes we had with Shermer. He ran a lot second and 10, and that pissed a lot of people off.
Yeah, no, I mean, that definitely held up. My biggest issue is, like, me personally, I feel like the Broncos ran too many ISO routes, and I kind of knew that coming in because I talked to Mark Schofield back when the Broncos hired Shermer. And I kind of had that idea that was going to probably be a thing. I think you get to about the 30, like going in, and he always dials up a shot play from about the 30. Like that's just like a thing. Like one of those three downs is going to be devoted to just throwing it up and hopefully somebody comes down with it. I would like to see more motion, although I'm going to admit I would say that about just about every coordinator in the NFL. I think motion, it's a cheat code. And coordinators, if you do it right, it helps your quarterback because it helps you identify things. You can create matchups. Like, so I am a proponent of no one really does it enough. And I like play action. Obviously a lot of Broncos fans will stick to that just because Drew Lock is a different quarterback on play action versus an off play action. My argument there. And again, like on Twitter, this is hard to get into this too much because it's, you know, so, you know, black, white, but like, I thought Shurmur did a good job adjusting over the course of the season to Drew Lock's strengths. I thought it took too long. But by season's end, like about Miami on, the Broncos were running a ton of play action. They were running a lot of play action boots rolling out to the right to take advantage of what Lock does, to give him half field reads, to get him on the move, because Drew Lock had issues settling into the pocket. He would bail out of clean pockets. With Teddy Bridgewater, I don't think that's going to be a thing. And I think Shurmur is going to be able to give him more pre-snap reads where you can decide which way you want to go with the ball. And I think that caters to Shurmur's strengths more. So I think that'll help.
I also, go ahead. Shurmur used a lot more single back than Scangarello. That's who that was. Yes. Who your offensive coordinator was before.
Basically that set him off on a bad step right from the go. Is basically when Shurmur was hired, almost immediately afterwards, the Broncos dumped Andy Janovich to the Browns for a 7th round pick. And again, this is on Elway as much as anything. This is like not even 6 months after Elway gave Andy Janovich a big extension. So like they gave him a big extension, he got hurt, and then they shipped him out for nothing. And now Marquis Spencer, who was the Andy Janovich pick, got cut. So he's on the practice squad, but that's you turned a Pro Bowl fullback into a practice squad defensive lineman.
That's not a wise way to why though? Was Elway trying to philosophically get away from multiple running back personnel sets?
That's what it was, and again, this is my understanding of it. It was basically they just knew they weren't going to use him on offense, and then at that point, is it really worth paying a fullback if you're just going to see it? Like, I went and looked at Shurmur's fullback usage, and it was like 18 snaps with the Giants, like an actual fullback. He just didn't use 21 personnel that often. And with the Broncos last year, he didn't use 21 personnel very often. And when the Broncos use 21 personnel, what they actually do is they have Andrew Beck, who's a tight end / fullback, who can play either role. So what they'll do is they'll have him start out one way and then he'll motion back. And that's, you don't need to pay a fullback if that's what you're doing. That's the same problem in the preseason. Fans were starting to get really high on Adam Prentice. I understand it. Adam Prentice is good. That's why he's going to probably make it in the NFL. But the Broncos don't need an actual fullback. They need an H-back.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, there's the lines between 21 and 12 personnel are being blurred right now anyways. Yeah. If we're going to be honest, I mean, you see how Kyle Shanahan uses it. He'll have Juszczyk as an H-back, and then they'll motion him into a fullback. He does so many different things with his personnel, and that's something that's kind of been happening, especially last season. I think we'll probably even see more of it this year.
Yeah. Well, one of the other complaints a lot of people have, and again, Lock magnifies this, and again, like fairly unfairly, because a lot of listeners on my end obviously are going to be big Lock fans. Lock was drafted for the Kyle Shanahan type of offense, and like you know this as well as I do, the Kyle Shanahan offense de-emphasizes the reads a quarterback has to make because they do a good job dialing up open looks. Shurmur relies more on the quarterback to actually make the right read to get to the open guy. And that's not Drew Lock's strengths, and it never was. And so in a lot of ways, he was miscast in the Shurmur offense. And then COVID probably didn't help this in that. And again, like I want to say Fangio said this right during, you know, the end of training camp is basically like this year, you know, 2020, instead of cooking like pasta, we have to use some Chef Boyardee. And it was this idea, like we're just slapping together like base concepts, doing what we can with it. And I mean, it all came to a head in the Broncos game in Las Vegas where Drew Lock just had a complete meltdown. I want to say he had like a 30 passer rating, completed like 47% of his passes through four picks. I'm not looking at the numbers. So guys, if I'm wrong, I'm sorry. But at that point on, basically the Broncos tried to start to take the ball out of his hands some. Broncos basically stopped running empty. By Miami week, they basically were dialing more gap concepts up and using more play action to try and do that. And again, with Bridgewater, I think some of those stuff, like, I think we're going to see more empty. So I think that's going to be a thing because that's a good way to get the ball out of his hands quickly. It's also a way to spread out the defense and stress the secondary and kind of get away from the fact that the Giants are really, really strong right in the middle of the defense with Dexter Lawrence and Leonard Williams.
That would be the way to do it, to be honest. I mean, I've showed you that stat before this. I mean, not a lot of teams wanted to run up the gut against the Giants. I want to say it was like, it's been several years since a team had, I don't have the stat in front of me, but it was like several years since a team faced outside runs as much as the Giants did on defense. You have it there?
Yeah, I have it. So you shared this with me, so I'm going to give you all the credit with this. But opponents rushed between the guards on only 41.9% of all rushes that you guys faced. And when Football Outsiders looked at it, it was the lowest rate since 2017.
Which is incredible when you really think about it. And then when you watch the games, you see it too. It's a lot of stretch zone, a lot of try to get around the edge. And that's what the Giants defense is set up to do. The Giants defense is set up when they're in those tight fronts on early rundowns to spill everything outside to contain defenders and to secondary force defenders. And that's why the Giants put such a high priority on cornerbacks who can tackle, who can come up and be aggressive and tackle. If you can't tackle in this defense, you're not going to play. That's why Isaac Yiadom found his way onto the field, was because he was an aggressive player who was willing to tackle, albeit he couldn't cover. He couldn't play man coverage, and he was a liability in that sense. Kudos to Patrick Graham because he quickly adapted. Against the Steelers, it was evident on Monday Night Football that, you know what, man coverage might not be our thing. By the time they were playing the Rams, they were getting their zone defense all figured out and everything. And that was only a couple weeks later, week three, I think it was, or week four, actually, after that 49ers debacle.
I'm really curious with Shermer to see how much the Broncos try to run inside zone, because they ran a lot of inside zone last year. And that's Melvin Gordon's like key concept. Like that is his bread and butter concept. But honestly, like Javonte Williams, the Broncos, again, we mentioned this, the Broncos traded up to draft Javonte Williams. Javonte Williams is actually best on like OH counter or like GT counter. Like he's better on gap concepts where he's not actually having to make the decision where to go to the ball. And that would be a way to kind of get him out on the boundary. And Javonte Williams is really good at breaking tackles. Like he's one of the better tackle breakers that I've, like his contact balance is insane. And that would be a good matchup of getting him against a DB. So I do think the Broncos are going to try and do that.
Yes, I 100% think that if the Giants are lining up in those tight fronts, trying to spill everything. And then if you have Darnay Holmes out there, who's like 5'10", 190 pounds on a good day, or and he might be like 200, but he's 5'10" on a good day. I mean, that could be a not great, but he's an aggressive, smaller cornerback. He's always going to give it his all. The Giants, though, I'll tell one thing, man. I mean, it might sound like I'm negative on them. These guys play for this coaching staff. Like the effort is going to be there 120% of the time. And I think they have a lot of underrated players on their defense that if this team does start winning games and if they have that big game in prime time, you know, if they get any of that, I feel like they'd be more noticeable names. Guys like James Bradbury, Blake Martinez, and even Leonard Williams, which I feel like Leonard Williams probably nationally gets a little bit more recognition than some of these other players. But Logan Ryan as the leader too. Logan Ryan is one of the he's a pivotal part of this recipe on defense, and I believe he's not really discussed enough amongst Giants fans his impact as somebody who ensures that everything's set up on the back end pre to post snap, and also his ability to kind of trap quarterbacks into bad mistakes. I'm a big Logan Ryan fan. That's why he got that contract, and that was a pretty hefty contract at the end of the season, but hopefully he can maintain young legs through his early 30s.
I really like James Bradbury, and I do think that he doesn't get as much recognition as he deserves. I scouted him for the scouting academy back when he was with the Panthers. So when you guys signed him, everyone was kind of panning that move when it first happened, because it was like, oh, the numbers say this and the PFF grade says this. And again, I'm not trying to bash PFF, but like, I remember going back over the tape and saying he's matching up against Mike Evans twice. He's matching up against Julio twice. Like he's going against, honestly, probably one of the best divisions for receivers in football. Like, of course he's going to have some bad matchups. Like that happens, but the way he battled and the way he could stick on guys, like I assumed if he still had his legs, cause again, I hadn't scouted him the year before you guys signed, but I was like, if he still has his legs, like I have no doubt that he's going to be good.
Yeah, and he was maximized in this scheme. I mean, his ability to click and close and trust what he sees, the route concepts in front of him when he is in zone, he's so quick to click and close downhill. And then he's also really, really disruptive getting his hands into the catch point. I'm curious, and I want to get your take on this. I know Teddy Bridgewater's relatively new. Do you think would he be a quarterback to be averse to kind of throwing towards a number one type of cornerback? or do you think he'll actually, that won't even matter whatsoever?
I think for, based on what I know of Bridgewater, because I went back over his Carolina tape, I mean, he'll throw at a number one corner if the concept's getting the guy open. Bridgewater's one of those guys that when he's dialed in, it's basically like where the play is taking the ball, he'll take the ball. And that's honestly, that's bitten him in the past. Like, people say that Bridgewater's the safe option, and I get it on one level, but it's not like he won't throw picks. Like, and again, this is one of those things that, like, Broncos fans, like, don't lose your minds if he throws an interception. It might happen. But he's accurate, and he plays within the offense, and he puts the ball in the people's hands. That's why they went with him. But yeah, I do think he will be willing to throw the ball. I'm curious, and this is something I'm really looking for this year. One of my biggest critiques of Bridgewater off the tape I've seen is that he is too conservative at times. He doesn't go deep. He'll take the easy completions. And Shurmur will dial up shots. So it's like, you got to take those shots if they're there. So I'm curious kind of like that push-pull if like if Bridgewater kind of meets Shurmur or if Shurmur has to deal with the fact that he doesn't have that.
That's interesting, to be honest, because just thinking back to Pat Shurmur as the head coach of the Giants, he dialed up those shots for Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones, he hit those shots. I mean, Darius Slayton was a breakout, I guess you could say, rookie as a fifth-round pick, maximizing those yards on those types of plays down the field, usually in slot fade type of situations. And last year, he kind of had a down year as that X receiver in Jason Garrett's scheme. It wasn't, he was kind of pigeonholed into a role that might have been a little bit too big for him, and now he's a fourth receiver, or yeah, I guess you could say you got Kenny Galladay, Sterling Shepard, and then I don't know how you feel about Kadarius Toney. It's hard to really know where he's at right now, and then you have Darius Slayton, who I still think will be involved. But I think there's a lot of interesting matchups here, Joe. It really is. I mean, my biggest concern matchup would easily be those edges against the Giants' offensive line. What would be your biggest concern with the going in the Giants' favor? What do you think the Giants may have over the Broncos?
I am really nervous about the interior of the Broncos' the interior of the Broncos' offensive line against Leonard Williams and Dexter Lawrence, just because throughout, and again, the Broncos have a pretty good defensive line. But throughout the preseason and camp, we kept hearing about how like the interior pressure was causing issues through camp. And then again, when I went through and looked at Lloyd Cushenberry in the preseason, he was giving ground to second team defensive linemen because the Broncos went 3-0 in the preseason, but the Broncos didn't play anybody. Everybody was resting starters. Like the Rams didn't play anybody. The Seahawks didn't play anybody. The Vikings had 30 something starters sitting, like starters. And then like a lot of primary backups were sitting. So yeah, they went 3-0, but they weren't playing anybody. And Lloyd Cushenberry was still giving some ground. So against somebody like Leonard Williams, and again, like I think a lot of Leonard Williams. I think he gets some hype, but I don't think he gets what he actually deserves based on like he's an animal. Like he's a Planet Theory guy, and you probably know this from like the Bill Parcells. Like for listeners, like Planet Theory, like there are only so many 300-pound men who have the actual agility and burst to like really create issues as a pass rusher. Leonard Williams is one of those guys. And Dexter Lawrence, for how big he is, like he has that too. Like he's twitchy for a big guy. And that's going to be an issue because if the middle of the offensive line's collapsing, that's going to push Bridgewater into scramble situations. And I think he's going to be better under pressure than Drew Lock was a season ago. But that's because Drew Lock was abysmal against pressure a season ago. That's not because Teddy Bridgewater's going to be good at it. So that is one of those X factors I'm really nervous about. Just because I think ideally the Broncos want to be able to pass the ball, and that would make that hard. In terms of the Broncos defense against the Giants offense, the thing I'm most nervous about is Saquon Barkley against the linebackers.
Yeah, that's what I would circle as something that I'm excited to see. But again, I'm also just excited to see Saquon Barkley back out there. There's one more player I do want to ask you about, and that's Garrett Bowles. First off, I want to ask you, how is it having one of the premier offensive line coaches in the National Football League? Because Giants fans, we've been just complaining so much because we never get one. And it seems like Mike Munchak is up there with Bill Callahan as a 1-2.
He is. And what's weird about it is the Broncos, like, first of all, the Broncos still have had a lot of issues with their offensive line. I want to say about a month or so ago, I actually had a conversation with somebody on Cover 2 where I asked him, well, how long until we start to say, well, Mike Munchak's not doing his job? And again, I said this not to like suddenly dial up the heat on it, because I think there's obviously a lot to this, because the Broncos' problems on the offensive line, a lot of it is collecting talent. They paid Juwan James a lot of money, and then he basically has been a huge free agent bust. And then Elway drafted Lloyd Cushenberry, who so far has not put it together. Dalton Reisner and Graham Glasgow are free agent additions. And then they waited on Garrett Bowles to kind of put it together. I think Garrett Bowles is kind of like the guy you hold up on the pedestal of proof that Mike Munchak knows what he's doing. And again, I think he does. Like, I'm not trying to say he doesn't. Yeah. But Garrett Bowles went from being one of the biggest busts in the 2017 draft to last year he got an All-Pro nod. And I think you and I both keep up with Brandon Thorne. Like, I think the All-Pro nod might have been a little bit rich. Not to say he allowed 8 pressures by Sports Info Solutions charting. So like, he played really well. But when I talked to Thorne and when I've gone back over his tape, like, he still does have some issues with his hands. Like, his hands are still kind of coming along. So I think he could lose to a premier rusher. And the other problem is Dalton Reisner had a lot of issues with stunts last year, which, again, is why I asked you about what Graham's going to do, because when you isolate Dalton Reisner against speed, he's had a lot of issues. And obviously the Broncos will probably slide the protection towards the right side to try and isolate Bowles because they can trust him. But that might cause issues if he's dealing with somebody coming late and he's not ready for it.
Yeah, you're going to be seeing some TE stunts then. You're going to see Dexter Lawrence as the penetrator and then probably Leonard Williams as the looper, which isn't necessarily great for you guys. Because, again, like you said, I mean, that's somebody who can bend too. Like, that's another part of Leonard Williams' game not a lot of people talk about. He can bend. Like, I'm not talking about Von Miller around the edge type of bend, but for a 300-pound dude with that length, I mean, that's why one of the reasons why the Giants paid him another one is because they invested a third-round pick in an impending free agent. And he also was coming off an 11.5 sack season, so you're not going to not pay that guy. But, I mean, he earned his bread, bro, so I'm happy for him. And, I mean, I'm wondering, I mean, the Giants had 40 without an edge rusher last year, really. I mean, Kyler Fackrell was, like, their best edge rusher after O'Shane Ximines and Lorenzo Carter missed the season. Kyler Fackrell's not there anymore. Now you get Lorenzo Carter back, you add Azeez Ojulari. Sadly, Ellerson Smith is on the IR right now. But with these edge rushers, I think the Giants can eclipse the 40 sacks that they had last year. And I'm interested to see how they do that or how many they can even get against Teddy Bridgewater in this offense.
Yeah, definitely. So to put you under the spot, I know I originally asked you like who will win and why, but I think this is kind of the better way to look at this. If the Giants win, how do you picture it kind of coming together?
The Giants win this game. I think there could be a special teams mistake. I think the defense could take advantage of Teddy Bridgewater, maybe force a turnover or two, create a short field where Jason Garrett and the offense can have a easier path to kind of scoring. Because the offense last year with the Giants, it was a lot of like 12, 13, 15 play drives. All right, we're in the red zone. Okay, we can't cash in. We got to kick a field goal. So hopefully that can change. But I think it's going to be more on the defense and the special teams rather than the offense if they were to win this game. But I will say on the offensive side, I think that with this Saquon Barkley back, I think you can get explosive plays much easier, which was the biggest bugaboo for this team last year. So you're talking about one run that hits right. It could be a really, really explosive play. And if they can get the ball rolling and they can establish the run, I think maybe they can just kind of possess the ball enough. But I don't really trust the team to be efficient on third down. So that's why I've definitely more towards the defense. But I would not be shocked if we see one explosive play from the Giants offense, which is something that we would love as Giants fans because it didn't happen a lot last year.
If the Broncos win, what do you think it's going to look like?
Strip sack. We've seen it way too much. I think you're going to see Daniel Jones under a lot of pressure. I think it's going to be – I just think in general it's probably going to be like an ugly 20-16, you know, maybe – I don't even know if 17-14, that's a little bit maybe really ugly, but like a 20-16 type of win where there's a lot of field goals and it's just kind of gross. But I think it's just defense just getting after Daniel Jones, Andrew Thomas just surrendering pressures, similar to what we saw in the Arizona game last year against Vance Joseph's defense and what we saw against a lot of the Dallas Cowboys in the Week 5 loss, which was another abysmal performance by the offensive line. I think it would be because of that. And then Teddy Bridgewater is just not making mistakes. He may not be doing, you know, putting up 350 passing yards or anything like that, but he's doing enough to allow Pat Shurmur to stay on script to get them into scoring position to either cash in with touchdowns or kick enough field goals to outscore the Giants offense that's going to be struggling because of the pass rush you guys have.
I kind of hope that's how it looks.
I don't.
Yeah, understandable. But, yeah. How much, and this is kind of as an aside, how much do you watch college football then? I watch a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, I watch college football.
What do you think of this quarterback class? I just have to ask you, because again, if Daniel Jones does not pan out, you guys are back in the quarterback market. obviously the Broncos now that they benched Drew Lock, are almost definitely back in the quarterback market. Like the consensus seems to be that this class is not going to be what last year's class was. Although last year's class was, I want to say it was special.
Yeah. I wanted to say that. I wanted to say it's hard to put those classes next to each other because last year's class was really, really special with Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Lance, Justin Fields. And then you got Mac Jones, who a lot of people are just like, Mac Jones, whatever. But I'm like, dude, Mac Jones is solid. Like he landed in a perfect situation as well. But this class, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm fully spun up on these prospects, but I look at Rattler and I see an athletic player who struggled in week one. It could be week one jitters. Who really knows? It's kind of hard to say. Howell definitely struggled as well. Sam Howell from North Carolina. I mean, he's a little bit smaller, undersized. I don't know if I would love that for New York. But the Giants are always looking for like a tall Daniel Jones, Eli Manning type of guy who's never going to attract a lot of attention to themselves, kind of like player. And I don't really know if there's anybody, I don't know enough, I guess, about the quarterbacks to see if there's going to be a player like that. But they're always looking for that politician type of guy who's going to say all the right stuff in the interview. And obviously they're going to have to be able to play. But just looking at it as a whole, the kid from Liberty has a pretty intriguing skill set.
Malik Willis.
He has a big arm. And then Carson Strong, he has a huge arm. I think he threw an interception this week, but I mean, that was an exciting game as well. I'm trying to think of other guys off the top of my head right now. Carson Strong was one that definitely, just because of arm talent, and that's what I love. And Willis has arm talent too. So from an arm talent perspective, those two intrigue me. But I mean, I can't make a declaration just because
I know we all have to write exactly the book on what it is after the first week, because that's the only week that matters. But
exactly. No. Do you have one that you really like for Denver?
No, I hate this class. I'll be honest. I'm not writing the book on it yet. But I went into this thinking that I had Spencer Rattler. If he would have come out last year, based on what I had seen of him, he would have been probably the fifth quarterback before Jones. But but I liked all the other four more than him. And he had, like you said, he had a down first game. I did not like Howell, because of Javonte Williams. I have watched a lot of Howell. I actually went over his tape twice. Granted, I was watching Williams, but then I got caught up because the narrative in Broncos local media from a couple different analysts was basically like, oh, why draft a quarterback in 2021 when you can just get Sam Howell in 2022? So I was like, okay. So how good is Sam Howell? And I watched him. I see poor man Baker Mayfield. And again, I liked Baker a lot, but I don't want poor man Baker Mayfield in the first round. Like, that guy's not going to save you. And like, we've seen what Baker Mayfield's done. Like, he's okay, but he's not, you're not pining your hopes on that guy. And those are the two.
Phil Longo's offense too. I mean,
I saw last year's tape, and it was basically, I saw a guy who, again, to his credit, he was making the most of it, but he had two NFL caliber running backs. He had two underrated receivers.
Yes.
And yes, his offensive line was trouble, but I didn't see a guy that I thought was going to succeed without that help around him. And again, so far he's lived up to that. So we'll see. I'm curious to see more of Strong. I'd like to see Malik Willis. I did not catch his first game. I've heard about it, but I haven't seen it yet. I know people are talking about Desmond Ridder. When I talked to Mark Schofield, he mentioned the guy from Boston College. I'm going to slaughter his name. Jukovic. And again, that's not it. I've read it 100 times. I can't pronounce it. But he's at Boston College. They played against Colgate and he looked really good. So I'm curious to see him more. But for me, like where I'm landing with the Broncos right now, I really hope Aaron Rodgers comes if they're going into a quarterback market, obviously. Maybe Matt Ryan if the Falcons, shit the bed. I hope it's not Kirk Cousins. I'm not a big Kirk Cousins guy.
Really?
No, I think he's better than the worst critics of him.
Yeah.
But he's a guy that you don't want to pay. You don't want to pay. Like, I'm of the opinion you should not pay an average quarterback $30 million. And I think Kirk Cousins is in that like second ish tier of like, he's top. He's like on a good year, he's in the top 10, like right at the edge of the top 10, but he's probably hovering around like 16, 17 to 10. And you don't want to give that guy $30 million because then you don't have the supporting cast to get him into the top 10.
No, that's
honestly. Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Barry.
I was just going to say that's something that Dan and myself, we bring up a lot on this podcast. That's kind of our thing with Daniel Jones right now. It's like, what is Daniel Jones' ceiling? Is it Jared Goff? Is it like a more athletic Jared Goff? Like that you don't want to pay money to someone like that. Like honestly, when I viewed Daniel Jones coming out of Duke, like I saw like the athleticism, I saw how there was nothing around him, but I watched like seven of his games before the Giants drafted him, and I ended up with like a mid-second round grade, I think, on my little grading scale. So like when the Giants drafted him, you know, in six, I was like, oh, geez. But like, you're going to have to make a decision on him. And again, I don't think those physical tools are quite there. Similar to what you're talking about with Kirk Cousins, it's like his ceiling might be like 14, you know, something like that, 13, 14. Like, I don't know if he's ever going to be like a top 10 talent in this league. And that's also because there's a lot of damn good quarterbacks in this league.
Yep. Well, and that was my fear with Locke. And again, I feel like I'm beating up on Locke, so I apologize, listeners, if you guys are getting mad about this. But Locke, when Locke came out, I watched every one of his games, and I didn't have all the All-22, but I watched as much of his games, and I watched as much of the All-22 as I could. Locke has lived up to exactly what I thought he was going to be when he came out. I thought he was going to be a roller coaster. I thought we were going to get some highlight plays, and I thought we were going to get a lot of bad if he was rushed into action too soon. And again, Broncos fans want to point to the winning record his rookie season, but they overlooked the fact that the Broncos didn't play anybody in those games. The Broncos played against the Chargers, who were tire fire, the Texans, who didn't have any tape on them, and they didn't have a defense. The Broncos beat the Raiders. Like, they didn't play anybody. They lost to the Chiefs, and he looked abysmal. So, and then last year, obviously, is last year. But again, he's been exactly what I want. So, like, my fear going into this year, if he won the competition, was the Broncos' schedule is very forgiving, which is kind of interesting because the AFC West is a murderer's row. But you look outside of the AFC West, like the Broncos are going to get to play the whole NFC East outside of the Cowboys. That should be opportunity to win at least of those two of those games. Like I would think the Broncos should be able to beat the Eagles. The Broncos have the Lions. Like the Broncos have games where they should come out ahead of this. And if George Payton is a QB wins guy, my fear was that he was going to give Drew Lock $20 million off of that. And that's honestly my fear with Teddy Bridgewater now is like Teddy Bridgewater is on an expiring contract after this year. I don't want them to overpay him, but I do think that he could be a pretty decent quarterback with the surrounding cast he has around him.
Yeah, that's the hope for you guys. I mean, I can see that. I think there's definitely a path for Teddy Bridgewater to be able to do that. But what I mean, he's going to probably be nothing more than some sort of bridge for you guys, I would imagine.
A point guard.
Yeah, I'm trying to like an Alex Smith or something exactly. Like that in the Kansas City Chiefs, or trying to think of someone modern. Like what other teams are in that situation where they have like the Lions are in that situation right now with Jared Goff, potentially. I mean, they have people who were in the Rams front office who drafted Goff. So maybe they're going to, I mean, what is he like 26 years old? Yeah, but I mean, yeah. If they have the first overall pick, they might be tempted to take a quarterback next year. So there's a couple teams that are in that potential quarterback market for next season. Broncos, Giants could be, who knows? I mean, I think a lot of it is also going to depend on Dave Gettleman's job status. I think if Gettleman is there, Daniel Jones is going to get an opportunity, but there's still so much to play out, so maybe I shouldn't make that declaration just yet.
Do you think the Giants make the playoffs this year?
I think they could. If I had to pick teams right now, I probably would say no, though. I would say no. I think the NFC West is way too strong. I like the Vikings and the Packers up north. I think in the South, I mean, like you look at it and you kind of try to narrow teams down. You're like, oh, crap, I don't have the Saints making it. And you're like, can I not have Sean Payton making it? Like, yeah. And that defense, and you start really questioning it. So I don't know if there's going to be multiple teams. So I think the avenue for them to make the playoffs would be to win the division. And I don't know if – I mean, Dak Prescott looked good last night.
Yeah, he did.
He looked really good. And the Dallas Cowboys looked really good just in general. So I'd probably say no as of right now, sadly.
So on the same note, do you think the Broncos make the playoffs? And you can say no because you just said the Giants won't. So no one's, you know, too mad.
I don't think so, probably. I'm trying to, like, go through the wild card teams. Because, I mean, in your own division, I guess. And you can tell me if I'm wrong here, you'd probably – be third, and I don't know if there'd be anybody who would argue that the Raiders were better than you, but people would probably put the Chargers over the Broncos right now, I'd imagine. Like, where do you see that?
I think that it's a fair argument to say that, because I do think the Chargers have a quarterback, and the Broncos have hopefully a guy who can be the bridge quarterback. Like, that's where they're at. I think the Broncos roster outside of quarterback is probably better than the Chargers right now. But okay. I think Brandon Staley, and again, this isn't me, you know, I think they're close enough that based on like kind of what happens, the Broncos could emerge as the number two. But I think it doesn't surprise me that like you can convince me that the Chargers are the better team. Like I'm not trying to fight that.
But I
do think like the Chiefs are going to run the division unless, you know, Patrick Mahomes gets hurt. And if anybody's quarterback gets hurt, you know, all bets are off. So like, that's not something you can really count on. For me, the one thing that I think is really working in the Broncos' favor is, first of all, the schedule like is pretty favorable. I think the Raiders are going to be a tire fire. Like, I think they're going to be pretty bad. I think this is going to be the year where everybody's starting to say like, why the heck isn't John Gruden on the hot seat? And then everybody's going to turn around and be like, oh yeah, his contract. Because they've done very little like in the years that he's been there so far. And they don't really look like they have a long-term plan in place. But the Colts, I don't believe Carson Wentz is going to be the answer for them. And I think that that's going to really hurt. I think the Ravens are going to be like, the Ravens look on paper like they should be a Super Bowl team. Like, to me, they look like probably one of the two or three best teams in the AFC West or AFC outside of the Chiefs. But they're, I mean, we're not even to week one and they're dealing with, they're down to their third string running back. Like, that's in a 17 game season. That's insane. Like, that's not great. And their offense needs running backs. I think Lamar Jackson will help whoever's there. But like, the Broncos had this happen, you know, back in like 2007. I might have the year wrong. They had to hire Tatum Bell out of a cell phone kiosk at a mall because their running back situation was just that desperate. And again, this happened over the course of the season. The Ravens are starting the year kind of starting to look like that. So that kind of hurts them. Maybe. I think the Steelers are going to be down, so I think that helps. So I think the Broncos can make the playoffs. I'm also sipping the Kool-Aid a little bit because I believe in this roster. I think if Aaron Rodgers would have came to the Broncos, they were the Super Bowl favorite, them and the Chiefs. Obviously, that didn't happen. But I think there's enough help for Teddy Bridgewater to look like the 16th best quarterback. And I think that if the defense is as good as Fangio can make this defense, I think that might be enough.
It's definitely not unreasonable, especially because you guys have the AFC South. If the Colts can't put it together, then you really just have the Titans and whatever defense they decide to put out there. And then the AFC East, I mean, I think the Patriots will bounce back a little bit. Miami, I think, is a team that could, you know, definitely make the playoffs this year. You have the Bills, but I don't really expect much from the Jets. I don't know. I mean, that's definitely a good argument. They're definitely a team I wouldn't be shocked if they make it. I'm trying to, like, the only teams that I would be, I think, shocked to make the playoffs would be the Texans, the Lions, probably, and then maybe the Jets.
Yeah, same. And then and
Jags, maybe.
Oh, man. And again, we're getting like way off the rails here. The Broncos have the Jaguars next. I am super, super curious to see how that goes just because like Urban Meyer was a good college coach, but like everything that's kind of happened since he's joined the Jaguars kind of paints a picture of like a guy who's in over his head a little bit and doesn't really realize it. And they have Trevor Lawrence, but the Broncos are catching Trevor Lawrence in week two. Instead of, you know, week 16, where he's actually kind of figured it out. That helps me, too.
Yeah, especially Vic Fangio against a young quarterback. I mean, he
should help.
I think so.
So. But cool. I don't want to keep you too long. I'm keeping you forever. What – you do a better job. Like, where can people find you? What are you working on? Like, what have you written lately? Like, you sent me a really great piece, guys. If you are listening to this and have not read that yet, go read it because like I do these, you know, each week I send, you know, I like ask somebody like, please, you know, help me answer some questions. Most people don't go as in depth as you do. And thank you. It was awesome. Like I felt like I have a much better grasp of the Giants because of you. So I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me on the Cover 2 podcast, man. I mean, this was a lot of fun just talking shop. And if anybody wants to find my work, you can find me on Twitter at Nick Falato. It's just my name, F-A-L-A-T-O. And myself and CBS's Dan Schneier host the Big Blue Banter podcast. You can find a lot of our Giants content. We focus on the All 22 film, Game Pass. Please get that up really soon. Breaking down kind of exactly breaking down the Giants from an evaluatory perspective. And yeah, you can also find me at Big Blue View, SB Nation, Giants Country for Sports Illustrated content all about the New York Giants.